idea.
Are there books that you'd add in?
Oh, yes. I think that was a great tragedy that when we closed the scriptures. What books I'd add? I'd add Martin Luther King's letter from a Birmingham jail to the Christian community, spelling out what the difference is between a moral law and an immoral law. I think that's an epistle that we ought to read. I'd go back and pick up some of the women's voices that have been repressed in Christian history, like Julian of Norwich, Hilda of Bingham, some of the great female mystics of the church. I'm deeply attracted to the writings of Dag Hammarskjöld, who used to be the head of the UN. In his book Markings, he was a profoundly religious man, not exactly cut in the mold of rigid Christian orthodoxy, but a profoundly religious man that I think his insights need to be preserved. And, you know, there are a lot of... Now, how would you go about doing that? I don't think there's ever any way we'll open the canon again, because I can't imagine the Christians of the world ever coming together and agreeing on what books ought to go in the Bible. So I think we have to just accept the fact that history has made the Bible a closed book, and we need to treasure it for what it is. We do not need to worship it as something that's infallible. It reflects its times. It believed that the earth was the center of the universe. It believed that women were inferior to men. It believed that slavery was a legitimate institution. It believed that homosexuals ought to be put to death. And I think we ought to recognize that those were the things that a period of our history believed, I think now wrongly, but they're incorporated into our sacred story. And you've got to be very careful that you don't endow that sacred story with those attitudes, with anything like the permanence of being God's eternal teaching. I think there are a lot of things that we could add, but the most important thing we need to do is to say that God has not stopped acting in this world. And the way I think churches will do that is that we will continue to read the Bible. I hope we'll continue to read the Hebrew Scriptures as well as the Christian writings. But a lot of churches add what they call a contemporary reading to their worship services. And they read from contemporary people who have insights into life that are very powerful and I think ought to be used in worship. And I think that's probably the best way that we'll be able to keep the Bible as a growing and open and loving book. Part of what I try to do with my writing is to break open that attitude toward the Bible that says somehow God dictated it and God stopped dictating in about 135 A.D. or C.E. when the second epistle of Peter got finally into the canon. There's some things in the Bible that you surely don't want to blame on God. I quote them all the time, and I don't understand why people just don't pick up the book and read it. But I don't know anybody that thinks genocide is a good idea today. And yet, if you read in the book of Samuel, the prophet Samuel goes up to King Saul and in the name of God instructs King Saul to make war against the Amalekites and to kill every man, woman, child, ox, and ass among the Amalekites. Well, Mark, that's genocide. I don't care what else you call it, that's genocide. Now, I do not intend to read that on Sunday morning in any church that I'm serving. And when I finish reading where God is instructing Saul to kill every man, woman, ox, and ass among the people of the nation you don't like, to say at the end of that reading, "This is the word of the Lord." That's the word of a tribal deity that, thank God, we've transcended. And when you talk about, when you made mention of the fact that I say the Bible is always evolving, yes, that's true. The Bible starts with a very tribal God who plays favorites. He has a chosen people and everybody else is unchosen. He hates all the enemies of the chosen people. That's not a very edifying God, but that's not where the Bible stops. The Bible begins to develop other ideas about God. You get Hosea that develops God as love. You get Amos who develops God as justice. You get Micah who develops God as interested in how you live, not how you worship. You get Malachi who says from the rising of the sun to its setting, God's name will be great among the Gentiles, and you're suddenly out of this tribal identity and you're moving into a universalism. And then you get Jesus who is in the great prophetic tradition. And Jesus says, folks, it's not just a matter of loving the people that love you and are like you. You've got to finally love your enemies. You've got to bless those who curse you and persecute you. So that the biblical God, I don't know that God ever changes, but our perception of God is always changing. And I think as we grow older, that, I mean in time, that we have a different perspective on God. Certainly I do. What is showing up in our world today is that instead of trying to convert the Muslims and the Jews and the Hindus and the Buddhists today, Christians are increasingly moving into having dialogue with these great religions of the world so that we can learn from one another. And I would say that we are evolving toward a world consciousness, and part of that world consciousness will be a religious consciousness. And I think that's the way we ought to be going, and I think we ought to do everything we could to encourage that.